Yo, this is P-Town's finest, representing the NEP, D. Stoudemire, and y'all know what we're talking about. No one's ready to deal with
us. This is CJ McCollum of your Portland Trailblazers, and you're listening to the Rip City Report with Casey Holdoff and Joe Freeman.
Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to another edition of the Rip City Report. I'm Joe Freeman, the Oregonian. He's Casey Holdall of Trailblazers.com.
Greetings and salutations, everybody, and to you, one Joseph, what's your middle name?
Robert.
Joseph Robert,
yeah.
Freeman.
However, my first name is not Joseph. It's just Joe.
It's just Joe. I think I did know that, actually, that it was just Joe,
yeah.
Which is, that's interesting. Your parents are like, no, let's skip the pretension. Let's just call him Joe.
Well, it gets way crazier than that. Mom's name, Joe. Dad's name, Joe. Dad's name, Joe.
Wait, your mom's name is Joe? Like,
Joe,
straight up Joe?
Joe, middle name, Ann. So Joanne, but her middle name's Ann. It's not Joanne. But,
no kidding.
No kidding.
How about that?
Yeah.
That I did not know.
Yeah, well, the things you know.
My mom's first name is Michelle. Well, her first name is actually Faye, but she goes by Michelle. So technically, her real name is Faye Michelle, but but she goes by Michelle because supposedly one of her aunts kind of strong-armed my grandparents into naming her Faye after her, but no one liked it. So then they went with Michelle.
Good
so
for her.
Go. Yeah.
She can be called whatever she'd like.
This is good, Joe.
Yeah.
We both have moms with interesting
indeed
name stories. Interesting name stories.
Air quotes.
Yes.
How have you been, Casey? It's nice to see you.
It's good to see you too, Joe. I've been well. You know, it's been
excellent.
Yeah, it's been a quick off season, but a rewarding one.
Good.
I feel like maybe not rewarding so much, but not bad.
Enjoyable.
Yeah, enjoyable.
Yeah.
So you know, as we were talking about pre-show, the weather has changed here on a dime. So really got a feeling that hey, it's maybe time to go back to work because
the weather tells me, man, it went from summer to fall in like 24
hours.
It'll
be back though, as we were also talking about. It'll be this first real strong brunt, and people will get nervous about, you know, winter starting basically at the beginning of October, end of September, but it'll reel back. It will get some nice days. Early October in Oregon, I feel like it's one of the nicer times of the year.
Yeah, so I was going to say, we totally disagree on weather. I like sun. I like the warmth. You want rain and cool. But I think we both can agree that Oregon fall is beautiful and arguably the best season around. Because, you know, you're ready to move past summer and get, not necessarily to winter, but it's a natural kind of feeling where it's time for the seasons to change.
And with all the smoke and the fires.
We needed it.
It was like that. I don't think anyone's lamenting the rain like they typically would in Oregon because it's like, hey, we need to get these fires out. I'm sick of breathing in ash and having it all over the place. And let's
do this.
Let's just move on. Yeah.
Well, it's nice to be back. It's been about a month since our last podcast, I think.
Yeah, maybe even a little bit longer, actually.
We did a scheduled podcast, I want to say, in my notes tell me that it was August. Let's see. Got to scroll up. August 17th, I think?
Yeah, so
August 17th. Yeah, so right at about a month. Obviously, August is the deadest, quietest month in the NBA.
Yeah.
But we're back. We're happy to be back. I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
We got media days on Monday. Training camp starting next week. I'm going to talk a little bit about all that. Kind of a quiet off season. How do the Blazers replace AC? What's the health status of a couple of important Blazers? Little look at the training camp invites. Few things we're looking at heading into camp, and we'll answer all of your questions. And we will do that very shortly. Before we do, though, please give Casey a follow on Twitter at Chold, Chold. And you can check out his co-workers' content at blazers.com/forwardcenter. And follow me on Twitter at Blazer Freeman. Check out mine and my colleagues' content at OregonLive.com/Blazers. And I think majority of you guys subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Give us a review. Give us all your five-star reviews. We want all of your love. If you take the time to enjoy the podcast, take a couple more minutes to give us a review on
Absolutely.
iTunes.
Are you guys putting the podcast on YouTube? I feel like
yes.
I saw that once or twice,
yes.
Because that's important. Did you know that YouTube is the number two search engine, Joe?
I did not know that. Behind Google?
Behind Google, yeah.
Behind Google,
that's where the content lives. So if you're listening / watching the Rip City Report on YouTube, you know, leave a comment or subscribe to that page as well.
There's a little thumbs up, thumbs down.
I think we're probably going to jump on that as well. So we will probably start putting this on there sometime soon. But we have to figure out some way to do it that's interesting. You know, I'll do it because if people are getting their content that way, I want them to get it. But I feel like just throwing it on to YouTube, I feel like we got to do more than that. Like, and I don't know necessarily that videotaping us while we're sitting here talking across the table is necessarily the thing we need to do, but I feel like it should be something. So if any of you out there have suggestions about a smart and maybe not so incredibly production-heavy way to
ramp it up,
to put something on the YouTube channel that will enhance it over just listening to it, let me know.
We're all ears.
Yeah.
We're always all ears. If you guys have things you want us to do or suggestions for the pod, give us a shoot
us
a text.
Know.
Yeah, let us
hit
know.
It up.
Or excuse me, text. Shoot us. Tweet at tweet
hit
at
on,
us.
Hit me on the bat phone.
The Rip City bat. The Rip City podcast bat phone. Where should we start? Let's get to news and notes. Actually,
yeah.
The Blazers will hold media day on Monday. That's kind of a long all day affair where every player goes up and answers questions and takes photos and such. So kind of an unofficial start to the season. I know that both of our respective outlets will be hammering that day with coverage. So check us out on those web pages and on Twitter for that. Then they start camp on Tuesday with two-a-day workouts at the practice facility in Tualatin. Shortly thereafter, on October 1st, I believe that's a Sunday, if I'm not mistaken.
You are correct.
The always popular Fan Fest will be held. That's at the Moda Center at 1 p.m. Again, October 1st, 1 p.m. at the Moda Center is Fan Fest. Tickets and parking, as always, are free to the public. And I noticed a slight change from past seasons this year. Tickets are available online. You can just go on to – you guys had a link to probably trailblazers.com, I would assume, where you can just click it on and get your tickets there.
That's good. It's always – you know, one of the things about FanFest has always been, you know, it's obviously in partnership with Wells Fargo. So, I mean, let's be honest about the goal of marketing and advertising is to get people into Wells Fargo. But again, like, I don't think that anyone's ever been turned away at FanFest.
Yeah.
I mean, they would much rather you get a ticket somewhere. And now that they're doing it online, that's fantastic because that allows people to
do it on your phone and online.
Exactly. But again, like, I don't think anyone's been like, oh, you didn't go to Wells Fargo? Yeah, I'm sorry, you can't come into FanFest.
Yeah. And a couple tips on FanFest. If you really want to get a good seat, and it's wide open seating, like you can get 100-level seats, you know, fourth row seats or what have you, center court. Just get there early, get in line. I mean, I've seen that line build an hour or more ahead of time. I think a 1 p.m. start will kind of negate a little bit of that because it usually is like 4 or 6 or something like that. But get there a little early if you want to get good seats and really take it all in. It's pretty casual, so it's a good chance to see your Blazers up close and personal.
By the way, too, shout out to the 1 o'clock start time on that as well. I know that maybe some people had mentioned that kids sports maybe is a little tougher with that, but I mean, no one's trying to be out till 9 o'clock on a Sunday to watch FanFest. So doing it in the afternoon, I think that's a smart move.
Kudos. Yeah, especially there's school the next day. If you're really juggling what to do with your kids,
That's what you should be concerned about is your child's academics, not their athletics.
Amen.
Let us take care of the athletic part.
Continuing with the news and notes, Damian Lillard will release his second album. I guess I should say Dame Dalla will release his second album, confirmed. And simultaneously, or at least at the same day, unveil his new shoe. I believe it's the fourth iteration of his shoe. That'll be October 6th, next Friday. And then finally, the Blazers released their third uniform last week, a red alternate. I don't know what they're calling it, but I'm not
statement jersey, Joe. It's the statement jersey.
I don't work for Nike, statement. So I really don't care. Their red alternate jersey.
Make a statement.
It's quite a bit different than their two main uniforms, which were only slight tweaks from the previous uniforms. And then, of course, their fourth and final uniform is still yet to be revealed. My understanding is it will be quite a step away from all the other uniforms and anything else you've ever seen. And loosely, that will be released. I get asked this a lot. Around the holidays is what. Now, I don't know if we're talking Thanksgiving, if we're talking Christmas, but I'm guessing it'll be fairly well before Christmas because they're going to want you to buy and spend money for the holidays.
When people say holidays, that to me is like everything between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And I apologize for people of other religions. I'm of no religion, so I don't have
–
it's all just commerce to me, but – but yeah, that when they say holidays, that's what I assume, and I would assume that around the same time there's I was reading one of Mo Harkless's quotes. He was the player that was representing the Trailblazers at the event that Nike had last week, and he did drop a little I believe he gave a little hint about what it's going to look like. So you might have to go back and dig through some of the things he wrote. It's not in my story, by the way, so I'm not trying to drive you into my story about the Nike statement jerseys trademark. 2019 or 2016. But I when I read it, I was like, oh, hey, Mo said something there.
Yeah, I think we both have sort of heard a little bit about what that fourth jersey will look like.
I've seen it, Joe. Okay. I mean, you know, if we want to talk about
if you want to really get
important
deep.
We are here.
We're not allowed to, like, talk about it. Just, you know, it's a variety of reasons. But I can tell you that from what I've heard, it's definitely unique, and you'll want to keep your eye out for that. I bet it'll be a divisive uniform.
They always are.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, that's just uniforms. It's just the nature of releasing uniforms. Some people are going to like them. Some people are going to absolutely hate them. Some people are going to be indifferent. When I was thinking about the release that the Nike did and how it got upstaged by the
video
2K
game
release that had those jerseys in it. You know, you do things to try to put it in the best light, but basically, like, it's always the same. Some people love it, some people hate it. Like, and so to try to promote it one way or another, it's almost futile. You
so
know,
on that
it's
note,
it's just going to be what it is.
On that note, you saw the red alternate up close and personal. Is it as ugly as it looks in person, or does it look way better and it looks nice?
I don't think it's ugly at all. It is a different color red, and it's not the same red that was on the old red jerseys. It's not that much different from it. Uh-huh. And I actually asked our designers. I was like, how different is this red from the other red? And you know, when you see it in person, it's not maybe as kind of neon-y as it kind of looks in photos, but it is different. And part of it's the fabric too. Like it has a different look to it
because
the materials and I noticed too, like the materials, I feel like on the red statement jerseys, you can really see like the difference in the fibers on that jersey as opposed to the white and the blacks. Like, I don't know exactly why that is, but I remember when I was holding it, I was like, man, this feels a lot different than those other two. So, you know, it's one of those things that I think there's also a difference between I hate this jersey and I don't like it as much as the red ones, you know, because for me, it's like you might not like it as much as the old red alternates.
Those old red alternates were nice.
They were nice. I liked them. When I went back to see how often the team wore them last year, it was really infrequent.
That's pretty consistent, though.
They wore the white Rip Cities all the time, like because when I was trying to compare, like what are really the differences between these two jerseys, and granted they're quite different, so it wasn't that hard. But I was more like, wait, let's look at the red. I wanted to see how many stripes they had on the last one, and the last one had five stripes too. It's just they weren't uniform, you know,
yeah.
They were all kind of all over the place, and they just didn't wear those all that often last year.
What gun to your head? Favorite Blazers jersey, not just of the new ones, just favorite
of all time.
Yeah. I will say that 07-08 Hardwood Classic,
yeah,
the B-Roy
like
red, I really like that one.
I'm going to go the non-sleeve Rip Cities. I think I like white jerseys. I think it's a
crisp.
It's a clean look. It's a diversion from, you know, just saying Trailblazers or Portland on it. So I would go with that one. The red Hardwood Classic is up there. I'm curious if Nike could make those jerseys with their current fabrics, because I think that might be partially an issue too, because I know a lot of times people are like, why don't they remake some of these jerseys? And I think part of it really is, it's not that they couldn't get the materials, is they don't want to use those materials. And that's just me spitballing, but I do get that question a lot, so
there you go.
That's my thought on it.
Well, let's move into basketball here. It's been a quiet off season,
yeah,
especially for what we're used to around here. I think the quietest offseason that I remember was that year where there were no draft picks and like 13 of 15 guys came back. And I think the only move that Neil did was sign Steve Blake and Chris Kaman. And it was like, other than that, there was no changes. It wasn't quite that quiet, but it was very similar to that. A lot of very small things here and there, which I think we both expected. After the draft.
Absolutely.
And we've talked a lot about that, so we don't need to rehash that. But interesting, because it's quite clear that this team is relying almost exclusively on organic growth. And they believe, you know, coming off having the youngest roster in the NBA and a couple of seasons of mixed levels of success, they're banking on that organic growth and that core developing within. Obviously, I guess they... in a sense, they feel like they added their off-season piece at the deadline by getting Yusuf Nurkic, infusing the roster a little bit with a couple of rookies that they're pretty high on. So, but if this team's going to be better in a more challenging and loaded Western Conference, it's going to have to come from internal development. And yeah. I think we will see how much that happened next week. I mean, on Tuesday, we'll start to see where they're at with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, no, weren't a player in free agency at all, which was not a concern. Well, not a, I won't say it was
not a surprise.
Concern, not a surprise to anyone, which, again, like it always, on one hand, you go into free agency knowing, well, they don't really have any space, so they're not going to do much. But man, that does not keep people from saying, like, why aren't they doing anything? It's like, well, because they don't have any money. Like, they blew it all last summer. So
I think there's also, like, the fringe fan that isn't as knee-deep as we are.
Yeah,
that doesn't totally
you're
know.
You're probably right. And the idea is, like, well, if all these other teams are doing things, why aren't we? And, right. I mean, that I can understand that. But it always kind of does – I'm always like, because the thing we talked about last year is they spent all this money, so now they don't have any of it.
Yeah.
So, and granted, trading AC is not nothing, you know. But the fact that you take back a contract and then you waive the guy – I mean, that kind of that cuts down on the noise of that move, because there's nothing you're taking back and saying, hey, this is what they're doing, this is why they made that trade. It's like they moved AC because they wanted to get closer to the luxury tax and hopefully maybe have an opportunity to free up some of the offers that they might get in the future.
And everybody was complaining about his contract and Evan Turner's contract anyway, so they satisfied for those, not that they did it for those people, but those people should be happy that they got rid of one of those contracts.
Yeah, I mean, and I think I think the rebuttal to that would be, well, you shouldn't have signed it in the first place.
Fair enough.
But I do think that, yeah, there's that portion as well. And I'm not saying, like, the way that people view the offseason from it was positive, it was negative, just the idea that for us, it felt like it was kind of a quiet offseason. But there were some things that happened. I mean, you mentioned the draft. Having two draft picks as first-rounders is, you know, that's something, I guess.
Man, you go back to two seasons ago, though, where it was like,
yeah,
no, L.A. leaves, West goes, Knicks get traded.
Yeah, and you know, then they signed Damian. Yeah, that was a lot of transactions. This year, just not that many transactions. Can't forget, you know, they did trade Tim Quarterman as well, so that was in there. But again, like, when moving Tim Quarterman is kind of like the third most kind of interesting thing you did in an offseason, it's a pretty quiet offseason.
Yeah. Well, we sort of wanted to talk a little bit about camp, maybe some things that we're looking at heading into camp. And it's always, you know, you kind of get – you guys are excited. The season started. We're geared up to get back into the grind and all that. So I think we tend to put a little too much emphasis on camp and – place too much importance on it, beyond a couple, you know, battles for starting spots and battles for rotation spots. It's not that big of a deal. I mean, these guys have been working out for a while. They've had unofficial off-season workouts together for a while. It looks like they're playing a nice game of touch football also, mm-hmm. according to some of the social media I've seen.
Yeah, playing at the old at the field with the boys.
So anyway,
throwing it around.
So I think that there's, I guess what I mean is say 10, 15, certainly 20 years ago, training camp has a little bit of a less importance than it used to now.
Yeah, well, guys used to, you know, 20, 25 years ago, season would end, and guys would, they'd do stuff in the offseason, but they're not going through, like, full-on workouts for, you know, 7/8 of the offseason, which, I mean, now guys basically never stop playing. I mean, like, guys go on vacations for maybe a week, 2 weeks. But even on those vacations, guys are still going to the gym and getting workouts in. So whereas before you used training camp to kind of, like, get yourself into shape, maybe the old Andre Miller approach to training camp. Now it's, I mean, everyone comes in already not maybe in NBA game shape, but there's not, like, that we got to shed off three layers of fat before we can really get into kind of what we need to do as a team. They're already passed.
Yeah, if you don't come in shape, you're behind the curve already.
Yeah, if you don't come in shape, yeah, I mean, you might as well get ready to not see the court until December when you are in shape.
So one thing we're sort of looking at heading into camp is I don't know if it's the biggest storyline surrounding this team, but it's certainly one of the more popular storylines, and it's the one and only Yusuf Nurkić. Obviously, if you've seen any of his photos on Instagram that he posts very regularly, or Twitter, he's lost a lot of weight. He looks like he's in incredible shape, a lot different from the the physical stature that you saw out of the player who arrived in February or March or whenever that was last year. And it'll be interesting to see how that transfers over, because obviously part of his strengths lies in he's a big dude.
But, I mean,
when you look at young Sabas or young Sabonis, like that frame, it kind of reminds me of that frame. And I'm not suggesting they're the same kind of player, but one thing that we did see immediately with Yusuf is that he's a much better playmaker and passer and facilitator than he was billed to be when he arrived. And I think this will only help in that regard. It'll make him a little sleeker, more fast of foot for a guy who already had pretty good footwork and foot speed. And, you know, I think it'll add a little more versatility to his game, help that mid-range jumper a little bit. It'll be, especially in Stotts' system, that's, I'm twirling my finger around in a circular motion right now, because that's what they do on the court.
Flow.
Yeah, that flow. CJ, other guys are regularly on the most traveled miles in the NBA because they're moving so often. Nicholas Batum used to hold that mantra. So
yeah, I thought that was an interesting little NBA TV thing they put out, that the last 4 years, a Trailblazer has led the league in distance covered.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Nick four CJ. Years ago, Dame the year after that, and then CJ the last 2 years.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, though, because there's a part of me that's a little concerned. I mean, like, I think that Nurkic losing the weight is the best thing to do. Obviously, when you suffer a non-displaced fracture in your leg, you know, that's load on your leg. Big men typically have, or not typically, but very often has feet issues. It's a good thing for them to play lighter. But there is a part of me that's like, but what is he losing without having that bulk? Because I did, not that he's, you know, dropping his shoulder and just mowing guys over, but I felt like, you know, being that big and taking up that space and being pretty nimble, I felt like that was a
part of his strength.
Yeah, there was a benefit to that, you know, kind of a bit the way that kind of Cousins is able to to use his girth to kind of affect his will on a game. So yeah, that 90% of me is like, yeah, that's good. Nurkic lost that weight. I think that's gonna be good. And obviously, that was the main goal for Nurkic this offseason. I mean, Neil O'Shea said it. You know, when we got him, he wasn't in very good shape, and you know,
he said played it. Not
in very good shape. Yeah, no, he did too. Absolutely. So that was something they really obviously put a lot of effort into, and you see the photos of him now, and I've seen him a couple times at the PF, and he looks much slimmer. But yeah, and I think that's going to be good. But I'm curious if he's going to lose anything because of losing that
weight.
This
is what I wonder, and I haven't seen him, and I haven't, you know, we don't talk to trainers, and so we don't know what they think about the matter. But
they just do have a new trainer, by the way, too.
Yeah. I guess we could have put that in the news and notes.
Pretty minor, but
There's a chance that you just redistribute that weight and you still add strength. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You still solidify your base. You're still as strong as you were. It's just redistributed in other ways and in long term better and more safer, because it dissuades you or discourages injuries. I think that would probably, I'm guessing that played a role. He didn't necessarily, while he lost weight and some bulk, he might have gotten stronger.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And again, in today's NBA too, how big do you need your center to be? You know,
true,
like, because you're not going. I mean, there's no Hakeems. You know, there's no David Robinsons. You know, like there's not many guys out there that are like, boy, this is a big imposing figure, and how are we going to deal with him? There's no Shaq. You know, so slimming down is kind of, I guess that's the way that the NBA centers are going anyways. And, you know, whatever you might lose with Nurkic dropping some of that weight, you would have to more than make up for it with by less chance of injury issue. And to the more on-court perspective, the ability to move and to be nimble and to swing the ball and so on and so forth.
And I will say, in looking from a larger lens and an important standpoint, it is a very good sign that the guy who means so much and carries so much importance to your team has showed up dedicated, obviously in great shape, and is completely committed to the cause. Because this guy is arguably the most important piece. I mean, it's hard to say that with Damian Lillard, but we saw what a difference and
Absolutely.
An impact he can make last year. And you want to continue and carry that momentum, because this conference is as deep as it's ever been, and it's only the road is only going to be harder. And we're going to hear from day one about how this team needs to be better and more successful from day one, from the beginning. And you're going to want Nurkic to be at peak efficiency or production from day one. And so because of his importance, because you're looking for a breakout season from him, it's a good sign.
Since you mentioned peak efficiency too, Joe, just throw out there again. We know we talked about this last year, but I think you're going to see Yusuf Nurkic shoot some three-pointers this year.
Yeah? Yeah. What's your over-under on his three-point attempts?
Attempts per game?
No. Season attempts. Yep, over-under.
I will say he shoots over 50.
50? No way.
Yep.
50?
That's what I think, Joe.
What did he shoot one last year?
As far as like spotting an actual shot from three, not maybe just throwing it up, he might not have had a single one.
You're making me pull out my Trailblazers playoff media guide from last year.
I don't want to put pressure on the guy, and I know that, I mean, particularly with kind of
one. He had one.
He shot one last year?
One attempt.
Yeah.
He has six in his career. You're calling the over-under to 50. I take the under.
All right.
I take the under.
I'm just saying, man. I just got a feeling that
I was thinking you were going to say like 8 or 10 or something.
I would not be surprised if he attempted one three-pointer a game.
Wow.
I mean, I don't necessarily think that's going to happen, but it would not surprise me either.
I like it. Let's see where this goes.
I don't ask for much, folks. I try not to put undue requests upon you. What I will ask you is, if you are a person who hates centers shooting three-pointers,
open mind.
Yeah, let it go for like 4 months before you really start being like, this is awful, you know. And if after, let's say, the All-Star break, he is taking a three-pointer a game and he's shooting 15%, then by all means, have at it. But just give it a little time.
All-Star break might be a bit too far. Let's give him Christmas. Let's say Christmas.
Christmas is fair, Joe.
All right. Let's move along to another thing we're looking at in camp. I think another big thing is obviously not the biggest move, but how do you replace AC? You've lost a guy who's off your bench, never really quite fulfilled the sharpshooting reputation that he had. Although he was the most accurate three-point shooter.
Yeah, I was gonna, Joe. I don't think that was. I don't think that's the issue.
Yeah. What I was gonna say was just the threat of him being able to shoot.
Yeah.
Losing that threat is a big loss.
Absolutely.
Because defenses had to account for that. It was my long-winded way to get to that. And you are gonna have to replace that. Now, I will say that I find it very interesting and intriguing that Anthony Morrow was brought into camp, a guy who historically has been a very accurate three-point shooter who basically can plug and play in that role, can play some two, probably can play some three with his size, he's more of a two because he's not really bulky. But
well, and that was kind of the issue with AC, was that I think the goal was that, hey, AC can guard NBA threes, and it just never really played that way, you know, and defensively in general. I mean, that's what I was going to say. We were talking about shooting. Like the issue with AC was not his accuracy from three. I mean, because he was great. He was second in the NBA in three-point accuracy last year. It was just that, you know, that idea that like he was going to be a 3-and-D guy, which is how he kind of got onto the court initially his rookie year, like that, for whatever reason, that just kind of never took off, you know. And so basically ended up, you know, you got AC who's a great three-point shooter, but one, he's not shooting that many, and two, he's not helping you defensively the way that you hoped he would. So,
and I would not disagree with you, but more than the accuracy of his three-point shooting, his aggressiveness waned. He would take a lot one game and then not the next. And it was also very streaky. Like one game he'd go 8 for 10, and the next game he'd be 1 for 4 or 1 for 3. And so, you know, you wanted to see 5 to 7 attempts a game or 4 to 6 attempts a game consistently, and you wanted to see consistent make. So from that standpoint, I think he was a little inconsistent as well. But
But having said that, he's a
– it's a loss.
It's a loss for sure.
So, you know, you look, do you play Mo Harkless more? Do you play Aminu more? Does Turner get more minutes? You know, does Pat Connaughton get a chance at rotation minutes, and then you throw Anthony Morrow in there, you know, I think it's some combination of all of that, yeah. And it will range. You know, this stuff fluctuates a lot over the course of a season, and at some point, certainly initially, all these guys will get a legitimate chance.
Yeah.
There's a need. There's a hole there.
There is. A couple things. One, I would imagine that perhaps the Blazers don't shoot as many three-pointers this year as they have in the past. I mean, I think they're still...
You're calling for Nurkic to shoot 53s.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is I don't think there's not anyone on the team that's going to replace AC's three-point shooting. You know, like Anthony Morrow, yeah, he's been a good three-point shooter in his career. I would be very surprised if Anthony Morrow, if he makes the team, plays 10 minutes a game. You know, like I think that probably what happens with AC is that they're just going to have to deal with not having that three-point shooting that you had with Crabbe, and they're just going to have to take fewer three-pointers would be my guess. You know, I think part of the goal is, or the hope is, maybe Mo Harkless shoots decent from three this year. I think the hope and the goal is maybe that Chief, which happy birthday, Al-Farouq Aminu, by the way.
Today's birthday?
I believe it is.
Happy birthday, Chief.
A lot of late September birthdays on this team. I guess, you know, that's around New Year's, you know, rebirth. But anyway, so the idea that perhaps Al-Farouq gets the stroke that he had 2 years ago back again, and then maybe the hope that, you know, Evan Turner shoots a little bit better from three as well. But that to me is how they're going to deal with that. And when you look at that situation, to me it just seems like maybe they're just going to take some fewer three-pointers.
I have a hard time seeing a Terry Stotts team shoot less threes.
I
think Mo Harkless saw his attempts at three-point go from 140 to 194 last year. A lot of talk about his off-season work on his jumper. His percentage increased to 35%, as we all well know, which is good. You're going to have a healthy and presumably more prepared Myers Leonard, who could soak up some threes, so that'll be some more. You've got Yusuf Nurkic shooting 50.
Shooting.
Dame and CJ are going to have the green light again. And how many games did Aminu miss last year? I should have had this ready here, but
like
I didn't know we were going to go here.
Maybe 20?
Yeah, so he played in 61 games. Yeah. So he played in 82 the year before, or maybe it was 80?
I believe he played in, all 82. I think he played in all 82.
And so his three-point attempts went from 349 down to 213. So presumably those will go back up.
Back, yeah.
So I think collectively you're just going to account for that in different ways. And however much Anthony Morrow, and I'm going to say that I think he's the guy who has the best chance of all those guys to make this team because he fills a need. You add his in there, however much time he plays, if he plays, I definitely will disagree with you on that. I think they will be at or where they were shooting threes.
See, this is good because usually
we agree with each other.
Yeah. Things. So I'm glad there's a little contention here in our predictions.
Not contention.
Since you mentioned it too, we might talk. Are we going to talk about the non-contract guys?
Sure.
Well, I would say.
No, we
say,
were, yeah.
I agree. I think that Anthony Morrow is the most likely to make the team, but I don't think they take any of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Just for the record, Anthony Morrow, Isaiah Briscoe, Archie Goodwin, and I guess you count C.J. Wilcox, who's on a two-way contract. Those are the guys with training camp invites who – and there is an open roster spot.
There is a open spot.
Now, why would you not take Anthony Morrow if he plays well and to add shooting that you might potentially need? Why would you not take him?
Well,
like
because
a money thing?
I think it basically comes down to, are you going to use Anthony Morrow enough to make up for the fact that he's going to add, what, like – $2 million to your salary tax bill?
Luxury tax
bill.
But when does that doesn't take into effect? Like, if you sign him, he's not guaranteed for the whole year.
Right. I mean, yeah, I guess he might be guaranteed until whatever the guaranteed date is. And then maybe cut him. But it just seems to me that they're what, like 2.5 or 2 and a little bit of change away from the luxury tax line, which, you know, I think the idea is that if the team is playing well, you let it ride. If you're getting to the close to trade deadline, team doesn't look so good, and you're still over the tax, you try to do something to get under the tax to avoid the repeater. So in that case, is whatever you're going to get from, and that's for any of these players, not Anthony Morrow or Briscoe or Goodwin, is what you're getting from that guy, your 15th man, is that going to make up for having to try to get rid of that salary? And you're right, Joe. If it's non-guaranteed and they're just able to cut whoever it is at whatever that deadline is, yeah, then perhaps not. But You know, and I thought – I can't remember who it was. I wish I could give credit for it. It might have just been in the comment section somewhere. But I thought someone pointed out that bringing in those guys is maybe more to push guys like Jake Layman and guys like Pat Connaughton than it is necessarily for one of those guys to make the team, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. I don't know that those guys need pushing because there is a rotation spot up for grabs.
Yeah.
And that's the only carrot you need. That dangling that carrot is all an NBA player should want, especially a guy like, and I guess Jake's kind of in this situation. You're playing for your a contract.
Yeah,
I mean,
both
Pat,
those guys
yeah.
are. Yeah.
So it's like, you don't, I mean, that's
I mean, again, I don't question either Pat
or Jake's,
you know, dedication and want to improve. It's just, you know, when you have a guy on the team who's also fighting like mad to get on the team, I think that raises your level.
Yeah, and you know, I just don't know that Isaiah Briscoe or Archie Goodwin are they going to be such a step up from Shabazz that you want?
And that's a good point too. Yeah, I mean,
Shabazz, I thought in limited time last year played fairly well.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, it's a numbers crunch, and I don't think it's anything against Shabazz, but you know, for me, I think the more we've seen Shabazz, it's like this guy needs some minutes, man.
Yeah,
like he deserves some minutes. I don't know how you get it for him, but he seems like he's earned the opportunity to play a bit more.
So that just fuels even more why Isaiah
right.
and Archie.
But I mean, and the one thing I would say though is none of those guys are point guards though, and I mean, Shabazz is a point guard. I mean, he's a 5'10" guard.
Is Goodwin not a point guard?
I wouldn't really consider Archie Goodwin a point guard, no.
Hmm. Okay.
He's a two guard to me.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. Okay. So we sort of shoehorned there into another thing, which was paying attention to the training camp invites. That's something that we're looking at heading into camp. Another thing, the rookies, Caleb Swanigan, Zach Collins, how do they adapt? Do they carve out a role in the rotation? You know, a lot of times rookies enter camp, especially in this city with this fan base, where people expect a lot more than they're going to get. And I definitely think off Summer League, Caleb Swanigan's expectations have been raised quite a bit. And I think there's a lot of Blazers fans almost banking on him to make the rotation. I've seen some people surmise that he might be a starter. I think that's a bit much, but
yeah,
I could see him being a factor in the rotation.
Absolutely. And of the two, I mean, and we've talked about this before, I think that Caleb Swanigan is definitely the more likely of the two between him and Zach Collins to play significant minutes this season. I think part of that, too, is just because of, I mean, with Collins, you've got Yusuf Nurkic, you've got Myers Leonard, you got Ed Davis. I have a hard time seeing him at this point in his career passing any of those guys to get minutes.
Even Myers.
Yeah, even, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I think with Zach, it's going to take a little bit of time, both physically and from, like, a speed of the game. So I just have a hard time seeing how he's going to have the opportunity to get a whole lot of minutes without there being some kind of injury, unless he just plays out of his mind. And even then, I mean, he'll be doing that in practice. And, you know, there is something to be said about bringing guys along slowly, particularly big men, because, you know, you get out there on an island and I mean, and it can be hard and you look foolish and it can mess with your confidence. I don't think Zach Collins lacks confidence at all, but you know, there is something to bringing guys along slowly. I just feel like Swanigan, and I think you probably agree, Joe, he's more ready to play now. There's not as much of a crunch at his position, though. Also, I don't think it's going to be easy for him to get on the court. I think maybe I said in a previous podcast he might average 15 minutes a game. That's probably a bit bullish.
Going to backtrack on that.
Yeah,
a little.
But if so, someone wants to pull the audio on that, feel free to flame me when it doesn't happen, or pat me on the back when it does. But you have, you know, you figure this is the season that they're really going to be expecting a jump for Noah Vonleh. I think they're still probably going to play Al-Farouq at the four, though I wouldn't be surprised if he played a bit more three this year. And then you got Swanigan, basically. So I think he's going to get some opportunities, but of the two, I think he's going to play more, but we'll see. One thing, I've only got to watch a few practices, and we're not really supposed to talk about what we see, and I'm not going to talk about it much, other than to say I thought Zach Collins looked really good, particularly defensively. He made a couple plays where I was like, Wow. That's what they were seeing.
I sort of get the impression with him. Well, first of all, we didn't really get to see much at Summer League because he got hurt. So you can kind of watch that a little bit.
And what we did see was not great.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
but
it's
we didn't
fair.
See two games is two games. I mean, he got hurt in the third game. You saw two games. It's not an accurate reflection of what and who he is as a player. I think he's probably, and I don't know a lot about him. I did not watch Gonzaga play very often. So, I mean, more than twice last season. So, but he strikes me as the type of talent and the type of guy who plays better when he's around better guys. You know, kind of that cliche glue guy, that cliche guy who just other guys can prop him up a little bit, where his talents flourish when he's not the focal point of a team. And I think in many ways that's what he was in college too. He was kind of that type of player because he's so versatile. So to your sort of what you were intimating at, that might help him in the long run. But I think, and we're both in agreement on this, he's much more of a project right now. He's young, played one season of college, never was even in high school. He started 1 year. I mean, he was a late bloomer. All of this stuff you added up, just more of a project. And project is not a label that you want, but it's going
to
take him a bit more.
It's got such a negative connotation to it. Yeah. I mean, he needs to be developed, both in skill and in his physique. I mean, I think he's going to be a lot better than I think some fans kind of assume. I mean, and basically, at this point, like, the people think Zach Collins is like, he's a tall white guy, and they think Myers Leonard and Myers stinks. So, and this is not me saying that. This is me kind of giving the opinion of a lot of people I hear from. So, I mean, if we can get away from that and just kind of judge Zach Collins on his own merits, I think he's going to be fine.
Okay, one more thing. Speaking of Myers Leonard, that's another thing we're looking at is what is his mental state like? Where is his confidence at? Where is his physical ability at? I know he spent the off season playing in pickup games, working with a trainer, kind of reshaping his game and reshaping his mind, I think, in a lot of ways. And, you know, as Neil Olshey said in the exit interviews last year with Myers, it's all about confidence. Mm-hmm. He definitely has the physical makeup and the skills to deliver. I think without getting too deep in Myers, I think I can speak for both of us that we have sort of reached the same, and I think we've talked about it a lot last year. I want to see it out of him.
Yeah.
We're at a prove-it-to-me stage. I've been a guy who's, I don't know how to phrase it, but I haven't killed Myers in the past while fans have tried to kill him. I knew that he came in young and raw, and it was going to take a lot of time. But we've reached a stage where I just want to show it to me, Myers. I think you have it in you, but I need you to prove it.
Absolutely. I'm the same way. I mean, I'm sure we got some questions because our friend Jason Quick over at Comcast wrote he's been writing a little series, and one of his, the most recent one, about why you should be optimistic about the Blazers, and one of them was because of, you know, a new and improved Myers Leonard or something to that effect. I'm
not the first time we've heard
I hope,
that.
Yeah, and I hope that's true, but for me, yeah, it's like I got to see it. Like, I can't sit here and tell you that, yeah, Myers is going to come in and play the best basketball of his career, or play a lot better basketball than he's ever played, because I thought that might have happened last year or the year before that. So for me, it's like I'm just not gonna go there. And you know, I've talked to Myers a bit, and he says he feels great and he's never felt better in his life, but I feel like he said that last year.
Yeah.
So you know, at this point, it's like I want you to do well. Like I like Myers, and I'm on record, long time record, saying that like the things that he brings at that position would drastically change Portland's fortunes. If they had a guy of Myers' size who can stretch the floor and play defense, and Myers is a better defender, particularly in the post, than a lot of people give him credit for, that really changes what the Portland Trail Blazers could do. But you got to show it. You know, like it's way past the, you know, like, well, this is going to be the year because X, Y, and Z. It's like, if this is a year, awesome and great, but it's got to happen first before I'm going to get on that.
And then finally, the health of a couple of guys heading into camp: Yusuf Nurkic, Ed Davis. Obviously, they had their surgeries. Did Nurkic have surgery? No, he just had to stay off his leg, right?
They didn't do something to put that bone strengthen together?
I think it was a non-displaced fracture, so you don't need to.
They just let it sit there?
Yeah, because
let me you keep talking.
I mean, he played on it weeks later, but yeah, you can look it up. Anyway, both of those gentlemen healthy, in shape, ready to go in camp. So, and Ed Davis is a guy too. I think we really saw the, you know, how much the Blazers missed him last year because he was such an integral part of that team that surprisingly made the playoffs, went to the second round and all that 2 years ago. So a healthy Ed Davis, especially at a position of need at backup center, I think could make a world of difference also. So.
Absolutely. One, you are right. Yusuf did not have surgery. He had knee surgery in 2015, yeah. But not for the displaced fracture. Yeah, the thing with Ed Davis, and we've talked about it before, not healthy at all last season, to the point where his shoulder was bad even coming into the year. And yeah, you would hope that Ed coming back 100%, which all indications are that he will be ready to go at training camp, which obviously starts on Tuesday, that you will get a better Ed Davis than you got last year. And you know, I remember because I wrote a little story about it, but Ed was incredibly efficient 2 years ago for this Trailblazer team. By some measurements, he was the most efficient player in the NBA for long stretches of the season because basically what Ed does is he gets rebounds and he gets putbacks. He doesn't shoot. He only takes shots when he basically can hit them, and he hits the boards. And, I mean, those are the kind of things that, you know, we've seen Trailblazer teams kind of have issues with before, that there's not like that grinder, you know, like there's not that dog that goes in and gets those
those
tough offensive rebounds and putbacks.
Sorry to cut you
no,
off.
Please.
I want that guy, and I think Ed is that guy also, but Noah Vonleh is kind of my X factor.
Absolutely,
for this team.
Yeah.
And I want to see him be that guy, and I think he can be that guy. And, you know, we're sort of reaching a point. This is his final year of his rookie deal. It's a big season for him. We saw what an impact Yusuf Nurkic can make on a guy like him. I want to see Noah Vonleh win the starting power forward job. And he started, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I did that countdown to training camp post. I want to say he started 85 games over the last 2 years or something like that. It's more than you think. And I want him to lock that down. I think fit-wise, what the Blazers need-wise, and point in his career-wise, it's time. And I'd like to see him get that spot. And I think that would be a big deal for the Blazers because, again, I think he in many ways is the X factor for this team. Now,
he has started 97 games of the past
there
two seasons.
There you go. You know, we could get deeper about who's going to be in the starting lineup, what's the rotation going to be like. Those are huge storylines for the training camp. But we could talk about that more next week, and we've got training camp and preseason to talk about that more. So we're already 45 minutes deep here. We've got a lot of questions from you guys. I say
yeah,
we move along to the questions.
Yeah.
Again, we solicited questions on Twitter.
I solicited questions on Twitter.
Hey, I was knee-deep in a neighborhood association meeting.
Oh,
man.
Yes,
could,
of course. The neighborhood association meetings.
You have no idea.
I go to neighborhood association meetings too, Joe.
Well, are you tweeting from them?
Hell yeah, I am.
Well,
probably more than I should be.
Exactly. It was.
In fact, I thought about tweeting someone this morning about the way that they covered a neighborhood association meeting that I was at about a year ago because there. I mean, it was a tenuous connection, but yes, I go to neighborhood association meetings. I donate things to our neighborhood association, Joe. When's the last time you gave something to your neighborhood association?
I donate to the Children's Cancer Association. So if you're going to belittle me for that one.
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's a different thing, Joe. I donate to, not the Humane Society, because Portland Humane Society is...
Well, right. So we all have our causes. I'm not going to say that my neighborhood association doesn't need
monetary
donations.
All I'm saying is that you could be tweeting about the Rip City Report from your neighborhood association meeting. That's what I'm saying, Joe.
Fair enough.
Or after it.
Well, then afterwards I went to, and congratulations to my colleague Ken Go. Yesterday was the
I did see that
40th anniversary of his working at the Oregonian. I am 40, so he has worked at the Oregonian as long as I've been alive. That's quite an accomplishment. Immediately after my neighborhood association meeting, I went directly to a celebration for him. So there you go. Anyway, enough excuses about why I did not tweet out the questions. Point being, we tweet out a query for questions every week. Keep an eye on that. Again, Casey.
And we get great questions, too.
We really do. You guys are great listeners, and we really do appreciate it. Casey's at Seahold on Twitter. I'm at Blazer Freeman. First up, from Dan Okerman, what was your guys' favorite offseason activity, and what are you most looking forward to this season? Well, offseason activities in my life are usually like vacations and stuff. I'm going to say my family trip to Hawaii was my favorite offseason activity.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I would say mine was we got a new puppy this offseason. We got a a Basset Hound puppy. We had been dogless for a couple of years. So that would be the, I would say, the best part of my off season was getting the puppy and training her and spending time with her, which has been a lot of fun for my wife and I.
I also had we went to the Florida State Alabama game. We did get tickets. Incredible story about how that happened. I'm not going to share it on the podcast because it's, you guys don't care, and it's way too long. It would take forever. But great trip to North Carolina and Atlanta to end the summer.
So. Now, and real quick too, I mean, how bummed are you about Florida State football though? Because isn't your quarterback like
done for the season?
Blew up or something?
I could get deep on this. I'm still optimistic.
You're feeling
and
good.
Excited.
Okay,
yeah,
that's actually all I wanted to know is how you were feeling about it. So good. Yeah, we went to Rockaway for a week,
nice.
Which was fantastic. I really got to try to figure out some way to. I mean, like I'm obviously far too young to retire, and I don't think we could swing two homes. But I gotta get a piece of property somewhere outside of.
Yeah,
the
you do.
Like,
so
it's,
I can.
It's
capitalize
on. I mean, I've always kind of had mixed feelings about living in the city, anyways, because I didn't grow up in the city. And yeah, every time I go out and spend time on the coast or in the Coast Range, it's like I gotta get something out here. I have to have a place to be out here because I gotta get away from things.
Make that happen. Next up from AQ, how does the loaded front court play out? Is Noah Vonleh feeling the heat from the rookies? Updates on Nurkic. Oh, so we've got three questions here. You tricked me, AQ.
All right, so give me the first one.
How does the loaded front court play out?
Well, I think Nurkic is obviously going to play a lot. He's going to start. I think that Vonleh will play. Starting power forward, I think Myers will be the backup to start at center. And
over Ed Davis?
Well, maybe not, actually. That is actually the backup center, I think, is one of the few actual battles in the lineup for the Trailblazers.
I think
year.
Starting four is a battle and starting three is a battle.
I don't think it is, really.
You don't think Evan and Mo are battling for starting three?
No, I don't.
Huh. Who do you think's to start? Well, that's the next question. We'll wait. Okay, interesting. I like Noah to start. I think he's going to – I'm on record of saying that. Nurkic is your starter, obviously. And then I think you've got some kind of combination of Ed Davis, Myers Leonard, and Caleb Swanigan kind of right there in those backup bigs. Oh, and Aminu. I mean, Aminu is going to play a lot of four, too.
Yeah, he is.
So I don't think we answered the question. But,
let's go to the next part of it. Either.
Well, feeling the heat from the rookies. We already talked about that, and we've talked about Nurkic. So let's get to John Ragel's question. Who will start at the 3 and 4 on opening night? Here you go.
3 and 4 on opening night. I believe Evan Turner will start at the 3, and I believe Noah Vonleh will start at the 4.
See, that's what I have in my my starting 5-2, but I've got to be honest. The Mo, Evan, I think that's going to be a good battle in training camp. I think you're going to start Evan because I think they really liked what he did in that starting lineup during the limited sample size they had before he broke his hand. And they kind of won his playmaking and defense in that starting. Although Mo's he's a budding defender too. But also I think CJ and Mo will play pretty well together in the backup unit too when CJ's handling.
I agree.
So,
but I do think it's going to be Evan.
All right. Next up from the Rip City Revival, predictions for the fourth uniform. We already talked about that. Sorry, Rip City Revival. Chris Takita wants to know, do you think Al-Farouq Aminu will have to play more three this season? We have a lot of bigs that will need minutes at the 4 and 5.
I do, actually. I think whereas the last two seasons, almost all of Farouk's minutes came at the 4, I think you are going to see Al-Farouq Aminu play more small forward this year.
Excuse me, I took a drink of coffee there. So, I agree. I think he'll play more. I still think he'll play a bit of four, a substantial amount of four, because Terry likes his small ball lineup. So, there you go. Jacob Parks wants to know if we can suggest a way for the Blazer fans to follow along during preseason games.
Well, both Joe and I were mistaken in thinking that the Blazers were broadcasting none of their preseason games. They are broadcasting their first two preseason games versus the Suns and Raptors. And NBA TV is going to broadcast the game against the Kings. So that's three games right there.
Also, all seven games will air on the radio, and you can listen to Brian Wheeler. Congratulations on your contract
Way
extension,
to go, Wheels.
You can listen to all those games old school style on the radio.
Absolutely. You got the radio option. Those three will be available on Comcast. And for those asking, I'm assuming that yes, NBA TV will black out those games in Portland that you
think
can
so?
Watch on. Well, I mean, if they're available on Comcast, then yes, because I mean that's the competitors. So
preseason, I was just
I mean, you would hope that they wouldn't, but I mean, they pay for the games.
It's the world,
and they want to monetize them. So, and then the other games, you know, a lot of times other teams will broadcast the game. So basically, look at Portland's schedule outside of the three games that you know that you'll be able to see, the Kings, the Suns, and the Raptors, and then go to those teams and see if they're going to be broadcasting those games. And if they are, typically there's one way or another you can find those games. Obviously, there's illegal streams for everything. If you really want to go that route, that's your option as well. So, yeah, and it's preseason, so, you know, at a certain point, you got to ask yourself, how much preseason basketball do I really need to watch?
Next up from Corbin Smith, please point to something in nature that's the color of red on the alternate. You phrased this very weird, Corbin. I'm having a hard time reading this. Please point to something in nature the color of red on the alternates look like. So he wants to know something that compare the alternate red uniform. Give me a color.
Well, I thought someone posted a response to that. There was some roses that looked like they were about.
Oh, is that
color.
What that was?
I believe that's what that was.
How about like.
Chest of a hummingbird.
Lava. Liquid hot magma.
Lava, yeah. Lava is one of them. Again, like, I don't think they're as hot pink as they sometimes look in photos.
Burning fires, which sadly is...
Yeah, the flames licking the top of something. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and the other part, too, is, you know, does it exist in nature? Who cares? They're not nature
true
uniforms.
That.
They're the Portland Trailblazers.
Next up from Mike Acker.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Nurk, league MVP and finals MVP, yes or yes?
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's the safe bet, right, that he's going to win both?
I will disagree. He will not win either. Next up from Brandon Goldner. Is the starting power forward spot Noah Vonleh's to lose? And who else has a legit shot to start alongside Nurk on opening night? So I think we can approach this a different way. We both agree that Noah Vonleh is our leading contender to start at power forward. Well, who among this lineup is his chief competitor?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Al-Farouq Aminu held that spot down.
I think Al-Farouq is one option.
Mo, if you really want to go small.
Yeah, Mo's an option.
I think he's more of a three, personally.
I do, too.
And then, you know, Myers and Caleb Swanigan, I guess, in theory, will be on that list, too. But I'm going Noah Aminu are my 1A and 1B.
Yeah, and that's a good point. There's not that much. I mean, if you assume that Ed Davis is a center, not a power forward, he's listed as a power forward. But, I mean, I feel like Ed's really more of a center at this point.
Especially the way Terry plays.
Exactly. So, yeah, That's a good point. I guess I really hadn't considered a whole lot. I don't know how much competition there is at power forward.
I think it's Aminu and Vonleh.
Yeah, I wouldn't say, like, I guess I wouldn't say it's Vonleh's to lose, but I think he's the most likely guy to get that spot. And I think, especially if he plays the way with Nurkic as he did at the end of the season. I mean, he looked really good playing alongside Nurk. So if they're able to recreate that chemistry, then yeah, I think it's Noah in a runaway, but if that kind of falters a little bit, maybe it opens up for someone else.
Yeah, I looked this up. Over the final 15 games of the season, Vonleh had 6 double-digit scoring games, 6 double-digit rebounding games, and 4 double-doubles. He had 11, 8, and 4 of those respectively all season. So statistical-wise,
yeah.
Notable improvement with the addition of Jusuf Nurkić, who just takes so much pressure and creates so much space off of him and creates so much space on the court for him. So there you go. Next up from Sarah, can you suggest any creative uses for a crab claw hat? Its main function is no longer valid. Well, we got Halloween coming up.
Yeah. So you could go as what? Go as an Alec Crab fan?
Sure. Oh, wait. Oh, so it's her. It's
hat.
For AC.
Yeah.
If you got any kids, it's a nice dress-up item you can give to your children to put it in their dress-up bucket.
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned, you know, if you're spending your time at the coast, you know, wearing a crab hat on the coast is, I mean, that's standard fare, so.
What about, Secret Santa gag gifts?
White elephant gift is a good one. You could just wear it out, you know, some...
It's Portland, maybe, you can get away with anything.
Yeah, exactly. You'll end up on some websites best dressed list or something like that, wearing a crab hat. I guess it also depends on like how crab we're talking about too. Like if it's just like if it's a screen print of a crab, then you know, wear it as you wear it. But if it's like a plush toy kind of,
that's how I envisioned
it. Would
yeah.
kind of be my assumption as well. And that is a little hard to miss.
You can get the league pass and watch Brooklyn and throw the hat on at the house, watching Brooklyn and AC play.
Yeah, that seems like a lot of work, though.
I'm just offering suggestions. She asked for suggestions.
They play so early on this side, and Brooklyn, they're not very good.
I think White Elephant's the way to go with that one.
Yeah, I would agree.
Next up from Jay Chan, will Pat be playing more minutes of the backup two with Alan Crabb gone, or will Evan Turner fill that role? Well, I think Casey and I think Evan Turner's going to start. If Evan Turner does, either way, Evan Turner is going to fill a lot of that role, you know, kind of with CJ and that backup unit, because, you know, CJ is both your starting two guard and your backup point guard. So, you know, you can do a similar thing with Evan. I think Pat's going to get as legit a chance as he's ever got in the league to earn a role and earn playing time, because there's an opportunity there. So I don't know that he's going to capture it, to be honest with you, because there are other. You know, there's creative ways to go about this. And Terry's never been shy about playing Dame, CJ, and with Evan. Those guys can play big minutes. You got Anthony Morrow to throw in there, possibly, if he makes a team.
Yeah.
Those are all the options. I think that's as unclear as anything on this team right now is who and how do you – who plays backup two and how do you soak up those minutes?
Yeah, I just feel like –
because if Evan starts at three, you know, he was kind of your one slash – two,
well, right, but I mean, he plays three. Dame goes out. CJ goes to one.
Then he's your.
He
two.
Goes to two. Yeah. Mo Harkless comes in as your three. So
there you go.
I think they make up mostly for it with playing Evan Turner more minutes.
Yeah.
I hope Pat gets an opportunity, but I think it's more likely than not that it'll be Evan Turner.
I guess you just articulated exactly what I was thinking in a very succinct way. So nice job.
Well, or I just regurgitated what you said.
I did not say that in that good a way. Next up from Sam with some lightning bolts in the middle. What should Blazer fans expect this season? Any other bold predictions, trades or otherwise? Let's save this one for a season preview.
Okay, but
because you know, like
prediction, yeah.
Like he's essentially wants to know what our expectations are for the season. Like probably an over under on wins. Are they a playoff team? That sort of thing. I say this is more of a training camp. Yeah,
all right, but I was thinking about this the other day though, Joe. We actually have to go back to these questions.
Yeah,
because I feel like we say we're going to go back to them and we don't.
We screwed Reed. Like we screwed Reed Andrews.
Exactly.
Yeah,
Reed is.
He had a good question. And part of the thing is we ended up not doing like a random nothing about Blazers podcast afterward because we weren't sure that you guys really wanted that. So
yeah, I mean, I don't want to relitigate history, Joe. I just want to make sure that if we're doing something, we're following through on it.
I'm pretty sure we'll answer Sam's question in another podcast. Thank you for the question, though, Sam. Fake Parker Hill wants to know, he read that Myers has been putting serious work in this summer. If so, do you think he still has a role in the rotation given its depth? I think there's a spot for him. I think there's a chance for him.
I do, too.
It's up to him.
He's got to earn it, but there's minutes and an opportunity available for Myers Leonard.
Okay, I Am a Dog wants to know, is it more likely that Nurkic becomes an all-star or regresses to the mediocre player he was? Portland's success depends a lot on his play. I don't think he's going to go back to being a mediocre player, so I guess if I have to go one of these two ways, I would say it would closer to an all-star, although I don't think he's going to be an all-star.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's making the all-star in the Western Conference, you have to be a superstar, basically, at this point to make the all-star team in the West. But yeah, I'm not expecting him to regress to where he was in Denver. And really, I mean, he just can't play. He wasn't able to play with Jokic. It didn't work. And they basically just said, this guy is so good that we don't care about Nurkic anymore. So, no, I don't know that he ever got bad. He just kind of got out of shape. So, yeah, I'm expecting maybe Nurkic to not be the same player he was for 20 games with Portland last year. But I would definitely more likely than not expect him to turn in a very quality season and in a contract year as well.
Next up from Dave Myers, who are you each expecting to have the biggest comeback season? Al-Farouq Aminu, Ed Davis, Myers Leonard, or someone else?
That's a good question.
I mean, on the one hand, Ed Davis, the bar is pretty low for him, like because he was injured and he didn't have a great year.
I feel the same way for Al-Farouq, though.
Yeah,
I feel like
similar.
Yeah.
But the thing about Rook is going into last season, in my brain, I felt he was the player most positioned to regress because he played so well and shot so well that I didn't think he could duplicate that. Now, a lot of what he gives you defensively and intangible-wise don't show up in the thing that might get you a quote-unquote biggest comeback honor. So, and then Myers, boy, that's a really good question, Dave.
I'm gonna go with Alfaruq because I think that he has the biggest chance to be a difference maker on the team of those three guys, and I do think that while I would chalk definitely some of it up to him having a career year 2 years ago and then kind of falling back a little bit, I do think that injury, particularly, I mean, he had the injury early, and I don't know how right he ever was with it. I just feel like some of that, it wasn't all regression. Some of it was actual, I am injured and not playing well. So I'm going to go with Rook. I think that, I think he, the way that he plays and what he brings, particularly defensively, is what the team needs the most and can have the biggest impact. So I'll go with the Chief.
I'll go with Chief as well, but I don't know that you're going to see it statistically. I think it's going to show up in different ways.
Yeah, I would say the same thing about Ed, too. You know, like, Ed is not going to go out there and average a double-double. But, you know, he's going to do some things that you need him to do. And it's not always going to, you know, he's not going to light up the stat sheet or anything. But he's gonna give you something as well if he's healthy and able to play to his strength.
Next up from Keith Feltner-Smith. Keith Feltner-Smith. What's your best case, worst case guess for the Blazers' record this season? I'll start. Best case, much like that year, what was the year? Terry's second year, when they beat Houston and got to the second round of the playoffs. Much like that year, the team gels, comes together, stays injury-free. They have so many pieces that they can, you know, find ways to succeed against a lot of different kind of looks from a lot of different kinds of teams. They win 50 games, secure a top five seed.
Yeah, that was 2013-14. They won 54 games and lost, and that was when they beat the Rockets in the playoffs. You're right, that was Terry's second season. The year after that, they won 54 games, 44 games, 41 games last year.
So I would say best case is something like that, a similar kind of season there. Worst case, besieged by injuries, Nurkic doesn't play as well as he showed in those 20 games. They have a hard time mixing and matching some of these pieces. Doesn't come together. Western Conference is too deep and tough. They win 40 games and miss the playoffs.
See, I'll say best case. So let's say best case, the Trailblazers play as well with Nurkic as they played in the last 20 games, in Nurkic's 20 games that he played for the Trailblazers. If that's standard Yusuf Nurkic, best case, Blazers are fighting for the fourth seed, would be my guess, somewhere around 54 to 56 wins. And that's a super best case. Worst case, Damian gets injured, Nurkic gets injured. Well, I'll take injuries out of it. Say that generally guys are healthy. Not they have no injuries, because every season you expect to have some injuries, but nothing that's like catastrophic, not like five or six guys in the regular rotation. So in that worst case scenario, they basically play the way they played for the first 2 months of last season, and I would put them at 35 wins.
All right. Next up from Stephen Reed, who wins in football between Florida State and Oregon? I think we're obviously going to pick our own teams that we like best. I'll say Florida State.
I don't know a whole lot about Florida State, but I wouldn't necessarily pick Oregon to win that. I just don't know what to make of the Oregon team.
Everybody's back on the bandwagon.
Well,
doesn't take long.
They probably shouldn't be. In my personal opinion, the only thing we know about the Ducks right now is that they're not awful.
Yeah,
that's it.
Okay, next up from Levi Loss, do Dame, CJ, and Nurkic have a legitimate chance at being a big three, or do we need another centerpiece? I think they are your big three. And I think people around the league, I wrote about this last year, actually. Will Barton said that. He's their legit, adds a big three, balances them out. We've talked a lot about this. That said, they do need to balance a roster around these three guys, especially defensively. There is work to be done, but I do think that they are a legit big three.
I do too. And, I mean, legit big three in that they're going to beat the Golden State Warriors as currently constructed? No.
Well, that's not a big three there.
Well,
that's a
that's like an eight.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that that, again, if Nurkic is anything close to what he was in his first stint, then, yeah, I mean, that is a strong three-man situation.
I was really bullish on this team going into free agency. I thought they could be a top four or five seed just with the roster they had coming back. But when so many players went to so many competing teams across the West, that really that set them back a lot expectation-wise. So before all that happened, I was on board. Now I'm a little more murky. But I do think they're a legit big three. Next up from Mad Max Braley, do you remember anybody with such a drastic physical change like Nurkic? It seems like he's come a long way. Was there a year that Greg Oden lost a lot of weight, kind of reshaped his body? Maybe like his third year?
Let me look at these photos here. You know,
because he kind of got gained a lot of weight after his first and second years. Maybe it was after his second season and he came back. And in fact, when he hurt himself for in the end, it was in those hardwood classic uniforms. Maybe that's why they don't wear those red uniforms that I like so much.
I think that maybe that is part of it. I think guys get injured in those. Yeah, I think you hit it there, John.
I think he had redefined his body quite a bit by then. But I don't know if he had quite changed like Nurkic.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of someone that, I mean, because part of it is that, you know, for the most part, guys are in shape. You know, like if you're playing, you're in shape because it's hard out there.
I will say this. Caleb Swanigan, in a different point in his life, reshaped his body way more than Nurkic.
And
he
has trimmed down, I feel like, considerably from Summer League. Just seeing him play a little bit at those runs, he looks like he's dropped a bit of weight to me as well. So,
all right, we're at an hour and 10 minutes, so let's wrap up these last couple questions here. Next up from Ritu Sami, will I ever be able to watch the Blazers on DirecTV? You know, I wish we could answer that question. Yeah, no control over that. Trust me, I have DirecTV. I want that to be an option, but, it doesn't look good. It's been 11 years.
I got to take the Myers Leonard approach to that, which is that.
Prove
until,
it.
But I will say, all games will be on YouTube this year. You can buy a subscription, I guess.
No, that's no different than Sony View or it's the same difference.
Oh, it's just
it's just a different way to do it. Still pay. You buy their television subscription.
Yeah, so long story short, well, I guess what I would say is no, that won't happen because
ever?
In another 3 years, both cable and satellite companies are going to be your not standard ways of actually accessing content. So it's not so much that I don't think they're going to get something done. I think by the time something does get done, that technology will have been moved on.
3 years, huh?
It's coming so fast.
Yeah. Next up from Hunter Cripps, what's the best way for people to meet the players? Love the pod. Keep up the good work. Thanks, Hunter. Yeah, that's kind of a luck of the draw thing, man. If you're in a restaurant and they're there, obviously, or you're out and about and you see them, but there's really no organized way for people to meet them.
I mean, the best way to meet them is if they have appearances places, go to those appearances.
Them. Yeah.
I mean, that's literally the best way to do it. the other way to do it is if you work for a company that is interested in spending a significant amount of money on a sponsorship with the Portland Trail Blazers, then that's another way to go as well. But other than that, guys have events, they do signings, go to those. And granted, you're not going to get to spend time with them necessarily, but I mean,
you get to meet them.
Say hello.
Yeah. Next up from Hoops and Stuff. Oh, we sort of answered. He has a crab about AC and the three. Sorry, Hoops and Stuff. But not sorry, because we answered your question before. Next up from James O'Connor. After the report about all the teams that didn't turn a profit, what do you see for the future of the revenue sharing among NBA teams?
That's a tough question. I think it's probably going to remain generally unchanged.
There's really no, I mean, how are you going to change it?
Like, well, the idea, I think, is that they would, that the teams in smaller markets would get even more money from teams in bigger markets because of their broadcast, their local broadcast deals. My guess is that it's not going to change all that much. I mean, I don't have basically anything to weigh that on, but I just think, you know, it's one of those things where if you're a small market team, you always bring up that you feel like there should be more revenue sharing or more profit sharing. And when you're a big market team, you think he should be? So,
and I have to say that and it's not just in the NBA, it's across professional sports, but let's stick to the NBA because that's what we're talking about. The richness and wealth of owners is transforming to a level unprecedented in previous times. It used to be that Paul Allen was an abnormality, his wealth in the league. But now, in order to buy a team like the Houston Rockets, you need $2 billion. Yeah. So when you're already that rich, I think that profitability is only a small sliver of why you're a professional franchise owner.
No, if you're buying an NBA franchise because you want to make money, you got to find another investment.
Exactly.
That's a poor one.
Yeah, exactly. And so from that standpoint, as long as you aren't losing oodles and oodles of money, I think you're going to be okay with where you're at. That said, the report that James is referring to, which was a very good story written by Windhorse and
I think Zach Lowe.
And Zach Lowe on ESPN, there was a nugget in there that said Paul Allen is always among the most vocal owners representing small market teams. And I think that's more of him representing his fellow small market owner than out of need, because somebody has to stand up for them. But from their perspective, when you look at a New York or a Lakers, the Lakers television contract is insane. It's like $100 million a year. And the Knicks can slab something on a urinal in the bathroom and make millions of dollars. Like, the discrepancy of money to be made is pretty drastic. And there is some type of realization from those owners that there needs to be a bigger distribution and even spread of that. So I think they're probably a lot on the same page, and I just don't know how much more you're really going to change.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it, particularly if you're a small market team that is decent, you know, I think on general principle, you're like, hey, we're running our business in a responsible fashion. We're trying to win ball games, and we're doing a decent job of it. I would use Portland Trailblazers as one of those examples. And then you got the Lakers and the Knicks, who are just awful right now, and they're making money hand over fist. So it seems like if you guys can make that kind of money when you're awful, maybe you can kick a little more to those of us who are actually, from a competitive standpoint, keeping the league afloat.
And I will say this. The the Golden State Warriors 7 years ago were not making as much money as they are now.
No.
If you produce a product that is worth watching and is good enough, you're going to make money no matter what market you're in. It's incumbent upon you to put forth a product that's worth investing in,
yeah,
if you will.
Absolutely.
So I don't know, man.
The Blazers
haven't turned a profit in decades. This isn't news for the Blazers. They have not been profitable any year. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. I'll ask on Media Day yet again.
Okay.
Because we can talk later.
So you're telling me the year that they had one of the lowest payrolls, they didn't turn a profit? I'm pretty sure they did, Joe.
Yeah, maybe that year they did.
I mean, I'm not trying to blow up the spot or anything, but with the changes to the CBA a few years ago, it definitely made it easier for teams to be more profitable.
I think that they just, I don't know.
They're not raking in money. Yeah. The Portland Trail Blazers are never going to make a lot of money, but that's not the goal. The goal is to not lose a ton of money.
Yeah.
And I think 2 years ago, they didn't lose a ton of money.
There you go. Good question, though, James.
Very.
He also has a question. He wants to know how we take our eggs.
I like my eggs over hard or scrambled.
I mix it up.
I do not like runny yolks.
I do a lot of scrambled with cheddar cheese at the house.
Cheese, salsa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do like over hard. I like over medium. I'll do an over easy. It gets messy, though, is why I don't like, especially on a breakfast sandwich.
I just never understood people's love of wet egg yolk. It's one of those things where, like, I'm like, what?
It tastes good. It's inherently more risky from a bacterial standpoint and all that. And it's also way more messy than I sometimes want to deal with. So I kind of go through phases, but my go-to more than any is scrambled with cheddar cheese.
Yeah, and that's typically what I'll get, because a lot of times if you order over hard eggs, like they fry the crap out of them. For me, I want like just a good hard boiled egg. Well, no, over medium you get runny yolks. Mm. See, what I want is I just want like it to be just It's not runny, but it's not solid yet.
Spongy.
Like that's what I'm looking for.
All right, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you guys for listening. We'll do this again every week now. We're back. So check us out on Twitter. Submit your questions. Subscribe to the podcast on whatever form of podcast app or venue that you use. Please review us. Give us those 5-star reviews. We really appreciate it. Talk to you next week.
No kidding, it's the Blazers and we're blasting the Lakers. Force the tempo, 50-point lead by halftime. Watch Rasheed Wallace keep smashing the baseline. Go left, go right, 360 degrees. Here comes the paint, Kobe.
Pippin' and he's popping a three.
Try and catch him coming down the court. Bonzi Wells, what a handle. It's amazing what he do for the sport. Damon Stoudemire saves the day, a.k.a. Mighty Mouse. Gonna show all of you scrubs how to play. What a show, why the Lakers even want it with us, you know.
No one's ready to deal with us.